What if there was someone who wanted to help you find a job? Choose Express Employment Professionals, and that's exactly what you'll get. They can help you find work in any industry. With just one interview at Express, you have a connection to endless jobs, whether you want a contract job, a new full-time role, or a summer job. Choose Express Employment Professionals. Express has more than 860 locally owned locations and no fees for job seekers. Visit expresspros.com today to find a location near you. Get ready to simplify your life with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. Stay connected wherever you go and transform your vehicle into a dependable Wi-Fi hotspot. Powering applications like real-time GPS and voice assistant, navigation becomes a breeze. Plus, with Wi-Fi for up to 10 devices, you can keep everyone entertained while on the road. Work, stream shows, or finish homework without missing a beat. Discover the convenience for yourself and see if you're eligible for a free trial at att.com/in-car Wi-Fi. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicles and operation compatible device and vehicle require. The weather is heating up, which means summer is almost here. Macy's is my go-to place for summer fashion, and I'm getting so excited just looking at Macy's.com for new bathing suits, beach towels, even floaties for the kids. They have all the poolside essentials. Macy's has everything you need for any summer occasion, your summer trip, wedding, or graduation. Macy's has you covered. You can shop all your favorite brands like DKNY, Michael Kors on 34th. Shop at Macy's.com or in store.
Wind Down with Jana Kramer, an iHeartRadio podcast.
If we could only record the pre-chat and the post-chat, that would just be...
That's the moneymaker.
Because you just go, you can say it, actually. It's kind of funny. Well, not that part, but the other part.
Okay. I go, well, it's with Jana Kramer and friend. Kat says, you're the boss to Jana. And I said, yeah,
I feel
Jana
like Kramer. And I go, yep.
It's just, yeah. Which is true, but you just don't usually.
I don't ever do
you
that.
You would like skirt around it. Well, no. Yeah. It's all three. No,
today
all she owned
it. Yeah. Today we are and friends.
Then, yep.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, but then you said, but what's his face still has his...
Oh, I won't say it.
We get so many messages.
All the time. They're like, why does he still say he's a host? I'm like, I don't know why.
I'm not sure either, actually.
Still on there. Quick checkup before our amazing guest joins the show. You can say hi, though. Come on, Jason.
Hi,
come
guys.
On in.
How are you? It is great to be here.
Oh, Jason, we're so happy to have you.
Jason's in the hen house.
That is very true. I like that. The hen house.
We are hen
new
house.
Title right there.
We are so excited to have Jason Waller on the show with us, and we're going to get into it. But how was everyone's Easter?
Good.
Yeah?
Yeah. It was tiring, but it was great.
Tiring.
Speaking of tiring.
Did you make everybody happy in your family?
Uh-huh. We'll see. We showed up.
Okay.
Years from now, they'll revisit it in therapy, and Kat will know the real truth of Easter 2023.
I already know. It's fine.
Did you divorce your husband?
I made it through 3 days of Disney at 30 weeks pregnant at 41 years old. I just want to high five myself.
That's very impressive.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Did you have fun?
You guys, my ankles were so swollen at the end of the day. I felt like I almost got one of those motorized carts. But I felt like there was somebody that needed it more than me. It was really something. But we did it.
Good.
Happiest place on earth is my bathtub, but my kids had the best time.
Wait, you can have it. You can take a bath with baby?
I mean, I have been.
Oh, okay.
I guess it's not? Third time. Everyone's just like, really? When you get to the third, you're just
I thought you
like,
couldn't have a bath with the baby.
So I never took baths with the other. I think it's past a certain point, maybe.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. We're going to find out because everyone will write to me.
You
now.
Will know now.
Dr. They Google come to is shame coming. Me.
No. I just says, I.
No, they will on Instagram. They'll write to
fine.
Me.
Oh,
all the so OBs good. Will come out. The secret OB listeners will come out.
It's fine.
It's fine.
How was your Easter?
Well,
he has risen indeed, Jana.
He has risen indeed. It was great. We went over to Sarah Bryce's house. We had church. It was lovely. I wasn't supposed to have the kids, but it was awesome. My ex let me have them, and it was like the best weekend ever. And it got out there. They're like, oh, seemingly Alan has met the kids because we took Jolie to a soccer game, but like also posted a photo of Alan. And then
they put
at Easter, like the photo. And then, so yes, he's met the kids.
As if Alan's not going to be where soccer is anyways.
I know, right?
Right.
But it went great. And the kids love him and it's been awesome.
Good.
Yeah.
Yay.
Good.
Okay. Now to you, Jason.
I know.
No, Easter was fantastic. We actually went to church on Saturday, so we had the whole Sunday off and we were outside for the first time, like all day, 8 hours. We had two water balloon flights. We went through, I think, like 450 water balloons and just...
Fun.
It was like, just acted like a kid. And we just had the best time, a couple Easter egg hunts and spent time with the kids and the wife and just relaxed.
You've been married for how many years now?
Oh my gosh, coming up on 10. Our anniversary is 10, 12, 13. Yeah, so coming up
Ashley.
Ashley is my
wife. And
you have
two babies.
Two babies. I got Delilah, who is 5, and Wyatt, who is, geez, almost 2. 2 in June.
So that's really been something.
Yeah.
Two-year-old boys are something.
Yes, it is. He's in that phase right now where he wants to do everything. And if you don't let him, he just loses his shit. So it's interesting. It's a process and I'm learning slowly but surely, that's for sure.
Right around 2 is when I felt like Legend and I needed our own couples counselor. So I'm going to talk to your wife. And you just moved here from California.
Yes, we just got here almost a year ago to date. Moved from Laguna Beach and absolutely loving it out here. You know, we came out here to slow our lives down and to get out of the riffraff of Southern California. And
Laguna Beach is just horrible.
It's beautiful, but it's
really,
it's different. It's different than it is. Nothing. I mean, it's a great place, the best childhood I ever had, but honestly, it's just different. And it's not the way that I had grown up.
Sure.
And I mean, just when we moved here, just to put it into perspective, this hasn't happened in 20 plus years since I lived there. Within the first 24 hours of us moving into our house, 3 little girls came and knocked on our door and asked my daughter to come out and play. And that's kind of one of those things where I looked at my wife and I was like, we made the right decision. And just kind of have that more wholesome vibe. And again, as I go back, I got 22 family members that still live from Laguna to Costa Mesa. So I'm there often. But if we were going to do it, we thought the time was now. The kids were young. We weren't going to uproot them if we didn't like it. We can move back, but also some little bit of backstory or history to this is my grandfather actually grew up off of Moore's Lane down in Brentwood.
I grew up on Moore's Lane.
Let's go.
Oh my gosh. Catherine.
Yeah. And then my mom was born in Memphis and then I got three generations or 4 generations from Tennessee on my mom's side. So
it feels rooted. Is anyone still here though right now or no?
Yeah. So I have great aunts and uncles that live up by Tim's Ford.
Cute.
I have some family in Clarksville.
Okay.
Kind of like scattered around, but just a few relatives.
It is very cozy here. People love on each other.
It is. The people are incredible. I mean, I didn't know. I'll never forget the drive when I was coming out here. So Ashley and the kids and mother-in-law, they all flew out here. And I remember driving with me and my dog and just a little trailer behind, like with our personal stuff. And I was like going through New Mexico. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, it was just like that real, like where it just kind of broke down. I'm like, dude, I'm literally leaving. And it just didn't hit me until then. And, but honestly, I was just asked the other day, you know, do I want to move back? And I really don't. It's almost a grieving process because that's all I've known for 35 years was Orange County.
Is there a piece of you, because of everything that you went through, does that piece hold on to not wanting to go back because of like who you were there?
That's a great question. No, I think I've done so much work on myself that I've really processed and gone through that where I'm really comfortable with where I'm at, like physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And I think through all that work, it's allotted me the opportunity to make a decision to actually be at a place to be like, hey, let's get up and move. Because I never thought that would be a part of the process, but that's just a testimony of when you put in the hard work, what can really come to fruition. Because if I didn't do the work I did on myself, I would have never have left there.
Well, it's interesting too, because one of our friends had said this, some of the most healing work that she's ever done was going back to the places that broke her the most and also realizing like who you are today. Like, so when you go back, you have to be so proud of who you are versus how you were then.
Yeah, I did I was on a interview yesterday and to look at, you know, a kid that was struggling severely with addiction, was very lost, and just in a really deep, dark place. I mean, my addiction drove me not to contemplation, but attempting suicide. And, I grew up, you have to understand, I think putting that into context, I grew up this happy, outgoing kid who loved surfing, skateboarding, snowboarding, was always outdoors. And in the depths of my addiction, it was me by myself, you know, in a room. And so it was a very lonely, miserable place. And so to be able to kind of pause and process through all the treatment centers I went through all the trials and tribulations with the law and just my own internal battles, the people I hurt, all this stuff, there was a lot there. I always joke like I'm going to be making amends for the rest of my life just because of all the destruction I did. But to actually really be honest with myself. Like, I'm so proud of where I am at today. Like, to be able to look in the mirror and to be happy with what I see. I'm comfortable in my own skin. And for years and years, I never was in that spot. And, you know, after doing so much work, I was able to actually identify that I struggled with addiction and alcoholism way before I ever picked up the drink or the drug. And that, you know, 12 or 13 years old, I had struggled severely with OCD to the point where I'd wash my hands till they would bleed. And I'd have to wear neoprene gloves at night. And I'd have to put, you know, put them in with Neosporin in them to let my hands heal. But on the outside, so that was what was going on behind closed doors. But on the outside, I was the popular kid. I was always good at sports and kind of had to live this double life, which ultimately led me to, you know, even with seeing psychiatrists and therapists and having really good support, I got a much more alleviation from substances. And it was, that's what I was using as my solution was alcohol, right? Mm-hmm. To take away that pain and what I'd felt, even though I was seeing doctors and, but again, at 12, 13, how are you able to, you know, not knowing what we know today, how are you able to try to process that type of stuff at that age? And so I never was able to get really fully open and honest. And so it's been a journey, you know, it's
for those of people that don't know the journey, how long were you in active addiction?
Oh God. I'd say I really started struggling about 16 or 17 years old, and then it progressed.
Is that when the show started?
I was shortly thereafter. So I think I started filming probably when I was like 17.
Laguna Beach.
Mm-hmm. And then it went from 16 to, I mean, bad until 23, was able to get sober July 23rd, 2010, had 5 years of sobriety, and then went out on pharmaceutical synthetic grade meth, aka Adderall. And that took me down really, really bad to the point of where on and off, it wasn't like a 3-year bender. It was like I'd have a few months sober. I just wasn't willing to get open and honest. But that landed me at the first floor in Hoag Hospital detoxing while Ashley was giving birth to Delilah on the third or fourth floor. And
so I saw that in our video that we did. And that was like, as when you look back now, I mean, now you can show your daughter, okay, this is, you know, your daddy is healthier, but is there a piece of you that struggles with that, knowing that you weren't there for your wife in that moment?
Yeah. It was a very,
like, how do you make amends with that with yourself, I guess? Or
I mean, forgiveness is one of the most powerful tools, right? Mm-hmm. And I can't hold on to those types of things. Sure. And I have to, I believe your greatest setbacks are the greatest opportunity for your comeback. And, you know, it's looking, it's so crazy to like think that your biggest deficits are your greatest assets. And, like that is a big motivating factor. Like, even though I was physically there, literally went from the first floor up the elevator to watch my daughter be born. And that's how cunning, baffling, and powerful addiction is. You'd think that would be enough to stop, but I didn't actively arrest the disease or get stabilized, right? I was in detox for like 2 days. Mm-hmm. I went home with the family and back at it again 4 or 5 mm-hmm. days later. And, it was about a 6-month on and off process where I actually was finally intervened on and I had to go back into treatment. I mean, I did the full thing that I needed to do.
Is that when it was over or did you still go back again?
That was when it was really over. That was kind of the real surrender. Mm-hmm. And then kind of to give you the full scope of everything is right after that, like a little bit long, like probably, I don't know, 9 months down the road, the Hills came back and there was an opportunity to come back on television. And again, as I thought, this would be a really good opportunity to share our story. And I think by expressing vulnerability, it creates humility and it allows an opportunity for people to connect. And Ashley had her own story and I had my story. And I thought this would be really powerful, but it was a huge decision because we're like, we love our life where it's at. Do we want to really go and do this? But I believe that it was kind of God's opportunity from being who I used to be to show how much I had changed, because even that relapse and stuff happened, I don't discredit all the work that I've done. I was a different person. Sure. Still. And I think that was just a part of that journey. And so I ended up experiencing just a lot of my own stuff came up again, insecurities. I was overweight, you know, and just going back on television, it was this, you know, just image, right? Self-image was just kind mm-hmm. of something that I was struggling with. And so we were already shooting. And then that stuff started to percolate. I did not reach out, did not talk to anybody. And I'd taken a pill, I drank, and then I called Dr. Drew and got open and honest. And so that was a huge difference, right? I'm not justifying me doing that, but I have the tools and the resources. I should have reached out to somebody way before I ever picked up. And because mm-hmm. a relapse manifests way before you're actually picking it up. It's like the dominoes falling. And so at that point, I got open and honest, and I started talking about it right away because I did not want it to go down that road. And so it was, I call it a lapse, if you will. Mm-hmm. If that didn't happen, I'd have over 5 years, but I have 3 years of sobriety now. And that was the last time that that had ever happened.
Hey there. Did you know that May is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month? Macy's is celebrating by highlighting some cool AAPI-owned brands like Cardon, Kaja, Amelia George, and Hey Maeve. I mean, I love that a big brand like Macy's is supporting Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. It's important. But you know what? The best reason to check out these brands is that they're just really awesome. Seriously, you need to check them out. And you know what else? You have a great opportunity to open up access to college for AAPI students and help them succeed by donating to APIA Scholars. APIA is the nation's leading nonprofit organization devoted to the academic, personal, and professional success of Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander students. You can donate online or just round up your purchase at Macy's when you check out. So do what you can to help. Join Macy's and round up your purchase to the nearest dollar at checkout to support APIA Scholars. Shop Asian American and Pacific Islander owned brands at Macy's.com or in store.
Get ready to simplify your life with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. Stay connected wherever you go and transform your vehicle into a dependable Wi-Fi hotspot. Powering applications like real-time GPS and voice assistant, navigation becomes a breeze. Plus, with Wi-Fi for up to 10 devices, you can keep everyone entertained while on the road. Work, stream shows, or finish homework without missing a beat. Discover the convenience for yourself and see if you're eligible for a free trial at att.com/in-car Wi-Fi. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicles and operation compatible device and vehicle require. What if there was someone who wanted to help you find a job? Not a website, but a person in your community that would help you for free? Choose Express Employment Professionals, and that's exactly what you'll get. Express Employment Professionals is the local jobs expert you can trust, and they never charge a fee to help with your job search. Go to expresspros.com to find the office near you or download the Express Jobs app to get started. With a wide range of opportunities in a variety of industries, from welding to sales, forklift operator to customer service, the team at Express is ready to help you or someone you know take the next career step. Whether you're looking for a contract job for the summer or a new full-time role, turn to Express Employment. Interviewing with Express Employment professionals can be as easy as a phone call, and one application with Express puts you in the running for numerous opportunities in your community. Don't go in your job search alone. Visit expresspros.com today.
When they say in what the meetings, like, you realize your life has become unmanageable. You basically got intervened. So a lot of times when they say like intervention sometimes don't work because you're not ready yet, right? So was there a moment where you're like, what made your life go, okay, it's unmanageable? Like, obviously, because it's like, was it what the people were saying to you in the intervention, or was it just like, because I've been told that those interventions don't work that well because they're not ready yet.
It's every different strokes, different folks, right? And I think if you have the right team and the right support, I think you can really help navigate that into getting people and guiding them, because a lot of people that are in those states are literally at a place where they've lost the right to make their own decisions. So they don't even know what's right or not. So I'll share with you what really, when I call my entering into recovery, was back in 2010. Because you have to remember, had everything society says amazing, whether it's notoriety, fame, access, all these different things. And, you know, I hated life. I mean, I tried taking my own life, and I'll never forget the moment, which I call my moment of clarity, when I was sitting in a therapist's office just like this with my mom and dad. And my mom and dad looked across from me, like, and we've done this 100 times. There was nothing that was unique about this, but there was something happened here. My dad just looked at me, and I've never seen him break down besides when his mom had passed away. And he just looks across and he goes, Jason, we don't know what to do anymore. You know, our marriage is suffering. The family is just a complete, we're totally lost. And mom and I lay in bed like two planks of wood waiting for the phone call that you're dead. And whatever that was, there was something that came very clear to me, and that became my motivating factor. Is like, I didn't care enough about myself to want to do it, but I tried taking my life. And so it's kind of like, what else is there to look for? But thank God for the family dynamic that I had had and the parents that I had had growing up, and just that sense of respect, and they became my motivating factor. And so that was the moment where I really transitioned. And then, you know, months down the road after I'd committed myself, I was open, I was willing to take direction. I got honest. You know, after my life started to change about 6 months down the road, I really saw that this was something I wanted to do for myself. And that's where my real journey had started. And mm-hmm. So every situation is different. Every situation is unique. There is not a one size fits all model. And, it's a very individualized process. And so, like, again, is how I got there may be different than how you would have gotten there. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's taking that into account and looking at people's background, their history, their, you know, the environment and the things that had happened to them, is their pre-genetic disposition. There's so many different things that can go into effect with it. And you
kind of said too, like, a lot of times people are like, all right, childhood, the wounds and the trauma, but it sounds like you had a great childhood too. So there, it's like, well, then why did this happen? Or how did I do this? Or like trying to find that, like, why must have been frustrating too.
Well, I'm Cherokee, German, and Irish. I should have had a stamp on the womb when I came out, just basically saying this kid cannot use anything. The pre-genetic disposition of my family is half my family struggles with addiction and our mental health. So it's like, again, as I had, I didn't have any of that crazy childhood trauma or, you know, the environmental stuff. Like, I had a very, if anything, I had a very amazing childhood. And mm-hmm. So it's where it wasn't really, didn't line up, but struggling with the mental health and stuff, that's now where it makes a clear picture, is that was kind of outside the context. And through Dr. Amen, who I'm starting to work with now, I had found out that I had potentially had PANDAS, which is basically I forget the acronym of what it is, mm-hmm. which I should know that, but it's basically caused by strep throat, which is a piece that actually will attack a part of your brain that can trigger OCD. And had I known that a long time ago, who knows what would have happened, but it's crazy to kind of see how I went down and navigated that road as a young adolescent.
So when you're young, and I'm glad you mentioned your parents, because that was one of my questions, like, where were they in all of this and how active were they? And when was the first time that they noticed anything, like the hand washing, all the things?
My parents were very involved. My mom, like, right when she saw my hands, and she's like, because I'd go like this and they'd just crack and they'd just bleed and stuff. And so she's psychiatrist. I mean, they were part of that whole process. And I mean, I started seeing somebody at 12, 13 years old, whenever it was that time frame when I was in there, and they did everything that they possibly could and what they were equipped with. And they were along that ride in that process. And, you know, and I was even a part of it, and that's how close we were at 16 and a half years old. When I went to Provo, Utah, to wilderness camp and to a boarding school, it wasn't like I was kidnapped in the middle of the night. I mean, I made that decision with them, like, hey, I'm kind of going down the wrong road. Like, let's course correct this. But after being out there for a little bit of time, I was able to manipulate my way back and be like, yeah, this ain't the right fit. Let's get back. And that's where they struggled, is they, you know, wherever there's an alcoholic or an addict, there's a codependent, and sometimes they're just as sick, if not sicker. And my parents were really harming me in areas when they thought they were doing good, like, and not to their own accord. They, you know, they just didn't have the knowledge. And so right. When they were throwing pillows when I really should have fallen in certain areas, and that progressively got worse. But also then fast forwarding through, you know, going on television, it's like at 18 years old, when you're the most impressionable and the most impulsive, like, and you're an adult, there's only so much control they have. Right. And so we had instant success. And so mm-hmm. like, usually where your parents have some type of financial restraint on you to a degree, if you're going to college or different things, they can kind of, you know, manage that process. And it was like, either join me or see ya.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how, you know, I respected them, but I was super, super, super sick. And all I cared about was the next drink and the next drug.
When you talked about amends in the show, is there anyone, like, did you have to have amends with a lot of people from the show?
Yeah. I made amends. I wish I could talk to you about something that we all just did, but I can't right now. There's something cool coming out, but I can't say anything about it. But I've made amends to, I'll say, every girlfriend on the shows.
There was a few. Were there any that didn't accept the amends?
I think the thing that people don't realize is, like, when I was the drunk asshole when I was drinking and stuff. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. But also I think when I was sober, people got to see who I really was. So, and I don't think the media or the viewers of the shows ever got to see that other side. And so I think even like when I've reconnected with like Kristen and Steven and all the people that I have over these last few years are just like, God, this is the guy that we knew. You know what I mean? It was just, you were lost. And so I think that the short answer is no. They're really happy and proud to see where I'm at today. And I think honestly, they're more surprised and shocked how much I've changed. Cause it was pretty bad.
Well, it's also 20 years ago, right? Almost 20. Like, I mean,
when you're it started, talking, yeah. I'm 36 now. I mean, it's.
They've all changed too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
A lot of grace, I would assume.
Yes.
Everyone's growing journey.
100%.
I think that with the amends too, I think it's a beautiful thing because it's not like you're, like, I've had to make amends with certain people and I've even said to them, I'm not asking for you to say it's okay or I forgive you or any of those things. I'm just telling you, like, you know, that I'm sorry. I handled this wrong. That was wrong of me. No excuses are made. And, you know, the person that I did do this to a couple months ago, they're like, it's okay. I'm like, no, it's not okay. You know, but.
No, it's keeping your side of the street clean, right? Yeah. And it's taking ownership and accountability. And the way that I approach amends is almost identical to that is I take full ownership and accountability for what I did. Mm-hmm. I'm not justifying my actions, but whatever I can do to make it right and better, please let me know, mm-hmm. you know, and it's sometimes, and I've had, trust me, over the course of time, there's people, not everybody's responded as gracefully. Some people just are like, thanks, but no thanks, you know, and, mm-hmm. but I'd say more so than not, people have been very receptive to it. But for me and my process and my recovery program, it's just keeping my side of the street clean. I have no control or I can't have an expectation on the outcome of it. That's not why I'm doing it. It's really to do the work and to make things right.
So right now you're very, which I love, that's how, because we met at, Jason and I met at an airport in LA and we ended up talking the entire flight. Like the only time I ever took a middle seat, right, Kat?
Yep.
Yeah, Catherine's like, oh yeah, I get the window.
I'm like over here reading a book while they talk the whole time. Yeah.
But it was so nice to connect with someone who was so open and vulnerable. And I loved hearing your story and getting to know you. And since that flight, I've been able to be a part of some of the stuff that you're doing with mental health. And I love what you're doing and I appreciate what you're doing because you're helping a lot of people and you're going to help even more with the Dr. Amen and everything else that you're doing. But, you know, because you are still in recovery, right, every day is a new day and it's something that you have to continue to work on. Is there a piece where sometimes you feel like what sometimes makes you feel like, oh my God, I feel like I'm slipping a little bit. And like, how do you kind of stay back on track?
Great question. I love that. I've developed and built a program by looking at it from structure and consistency creates safety. And I think if you have kids that you can kind of look at that as the same thing. When a kid's on routine, he wakes up, has his morning breakfast, he has his nap, he's usually typically pretty good. And the same thing with adults. And so I've incorporated that within my life. And so, to answer your first question is having that connection with myself when I'm getting overwhelmed or when I'm stressed, being able to identify and what that looks like. I always believe I live like a AAA modality. It's awareness, acceptance, and action. If I'm not aware of what's going on, I can't accept it. If I can't accept it, I can't take action. And so, it's recovery for me. It's a daily routine, right? And so in the morning, I wake up, I do a morning meditation. I read the Bible. I read a daily devotion. I do a gratitude list of three things I'm grateful for, but not only what, but why, because that's where really the meat lies. And then I do some form of exercise, whether it's going to the gym, whether it's taking my dog for a run, but I get outside, I get some sun, I get that. That's kind of how I always start my morning. And then sometimes I would incorporate that with, I have Bible study that I do, or I'll go to meetings and then I go about my day. And then at the end of the day, which I think is one of the most important things that I've done is I do an inventory, kind of like what we're talking about with making amends. I do that with myself. I do a check-in. I'm like, hey, where did things go right? And where did things go wrong? And what do I need to do to clean up? If there's anything that I did that I need to take ownership for, clean that up. But also acknowledge the successes that I did and the achievements that I made for the day. Because oftentimes I think we overlook that and giving myself kudos. But what that does is it allows me an opportunity to have a fresh morning that next morning. And so I think that's what's key is especially with addiction, there's a big difference between being abstinence of drugs and alcohol versus living a life in recovery. And it's one thing just to white knuckle it and to be a part of that process, but there's a difference when you're working a program. It doesn't mean I'm perfect. No, I still have my moments. I still outlash and stuff like that, but I have a support system. I still go to therapy. I've done this for years now on a weekly basis. I still see a therapist. I'm plugged into a church. I have three or four guys that hold me accountable. I have my Bible study that I can be totally open and connect with. And like coming in here, like you even saw me deep, you're like taking deep breaths. It's just because this week's been overwhelming. And so like I come in, I know like breathing really helps. It's just stuff that I've done over the course of time. It's funny that people will pick up on it, but it's just how I operate now, you know? And it's communicating about that, you know, like when it's just coming in, it's I try not to, like when people ask like, how's it going? It's like, I try to really say like what's going on as opposed to like, oh, I'm good. I'm great. Family's amazing. It's like, it's been overwhelming, you know, like, and life's very full right now and I'm very grateful. But that's, I think it's, the communication factor is huge and detrimental. The thing that kept me sick for so long was dishonesty. That was with myself, not only with people around me, but I was the person I was hurting most was me. Mm. And again, as I still fall short, you know, I think today is I take ownership in that. And I know I love the life I have today. And so like, I want that. I want to continue that. I didn't love the life I had for many years. And people on the outside, people be like, God, I want that life potentially. Not when I was getting arrested and all these other things, but some of the,
yeah, it was a hard pass when that was happening. Yeah. I'm not going to lie.
But the byproducts prior to that, or even as, you know, and just growing up, like when I was young, 12, 13, 14 years old, I just remember people like, hey, you have a great life. It's like, you don't know what goes on behind closed doors. Yeah. And I think that's the other piece too, is everybody struggling with something. And I'd say one of the biggest things to my recovery is service, is giving back. Mm. I try to do a lot of giving back.
So Ashley, does Ashley also seek support? Because I know it takes a village to help an addict in recovery.
Yes. So Ashley, actually, she does. And she was instrumental in me getting the help that I needed. And again, that goes back to one of the questions you were talking about before, is like, what was, you know, what took place in that intervention, and is people setting boundaries and her being able to take care of herself, because she got so sick in her own ways with codependency and enabling that she'd lost sight of who she was. Mm-hmm. I mean, she literally will tell you, she's like, I didn't know what color I liked. I mean, I didn't even know what food I liked. I mean, that's how her addiction was my addiction. She was like addicted to the addict. And so, yes, she, again, weekly therapy, does groups. She's actually now running and is the face of the Family Recovery Foundation, which is for people that are directly impacted by the disease of addiction. So it's a clinically led support group. So it's clinicians that are there to bring oversight and add value to people that were in her shoes. And so she runs that on a weekly basis. And
good for her.
She's actually really like trying to make a push in that area. I'd say that's one area that's deficient in the recovery community is for those that are directly impacted. And I'm supporting her in that from a legacy piece for me, is because when I was struggling, I had all the resources, I had all these people, all these places to go. And, you know, and keep in mind, Ashley has a newborn. There's, you know, all the things prior to leading up to that. I mean, she was putting her head on my heart every single night to see if I was still breathing. My heart was beating, like all these things that I don't witness, plus the verbal abuse and just the things that go along with addiction. And it's like, I come out and it's like, yep, you're supposed to be good, ready for me to come home. And it's like, that's just not the case. They had to endure so much. And there's so many people that are affected by all of that, that there's not enough being done. Because it's one thing, again, there's great, like OnSite, which is here in Tennessee, great program and stuff like that. But one is a lot of people can't afford that. Or two is, what are you doing for continuation after that, right? And I think Al-Anon and CODA meetings are all really good. But how can you kind of boost that on a steroidic level with, like, I think adding a therapist, right? And getting some clinical oversight. And so I'm hoping that that will kind of take off. And that's what her envision is because she's like, there's so many people that just are left to their own devices with this, and it's just not fair.
Hey there. Did you know that May is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month? Macy's is celebrating by highlighting some cool AAPI-owned brands like Cardon, Kaja, Amelia George, and Hey Maeve. I mean, I love that a big brand like Macy's is supporting Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. It's important. But you know what? The best reason to check out these brands is that they're just really awesome. Seriously, you need to check them out. And you know what else? You have a great opportunity to open up access to college for AAPI students.
and help them succeed by donating to APIA Scholars. APIA is the nation's leading nonprofit organization devoted to the academic, personal, and professional success of Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander students. You can donate online or just round up your purchase at Macy's when you check out. So do what you can to help. Join Macy's and round up your purchase to the nearest dollar at checkout to support APIA Scholars. Shop Asian American and Pacific Islander owned brands at Macy's.com or in store.
Get ready to simplify your life with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. Stay connected wherever you go and transform your vehicle into a dependable Wi-Fi hotspot. Powering applications like real-time GPS and voice assistant, navigation becomes a breeze. Plus, with Wi-Fi for up to 10 devices, you can keep everyone entertained while on the road. Work, stream shows, or finish homework without missing a beat. Discover the convenience for yourself and see if you're eligible for a free trial at att.com/in-car Wi-Fi. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicles in operation. Compatible device and vehicle require.
What if there was someone who wanted to help you find a job? Not a website, but a person in your community that would help you for free? Choose Express Employment Professionals, and that's exactly what you'll get. Express Employment Professionals is the local jobs expert you can trust, and they never charge a fee to help with your job search. Go to expresspros.com to find the office near you or download the Express Jobs app to get started. With a wide range of opportunities in a variety of industries, from welding to sales, forklift operator to customer service, the team at Express is ready to help you or someone you know take the next career step. Whether you're looking for a contract job for the summer or a new full-time role, turn to Express Employment. Interviewing with Express Employment Professionals can be as easy as a phone call, and one application with Express puts you in the running for numerous opportunities in your community. Don't go in your job search alone. Visit expresspros.com today.
So my dad was addicted my whole life, and I'll try to detach so I don't get emotional, but my mom was like wildly codependent and like an enabler, and he passed away a year ago, July.
Trying. Sorry. Which is, yeah. But I've watched her try to untangle for like the last like year and a half, and it's a mess. Like, she never got the apology. Like, I'm really, really proud of you. I'm proud of you for your kids and for Ashley that you can do the things you're doing, because a lot of people, like, I'm an adult child of an alcoholic. I never got the apology. Traumatic childhood, inconsistency. I never got the mends. I never got the ownership or any of that. And for what you're doing for your family and for the family cycle, and then for y'all to be pouring into community, like, I mean, I was sitting at Al-Anon meetings and I'm like, yeah, this is like fine, but like, there's no meat to this. There's no like, there's nobody there. Like, really, it's amazing. Don't get me wrong. And I'm not, it is a resource that's awesome, but it's just not rich enough. It's once a week. It feels like you leave feeling less alone, which is incredible.
I think when I used to go to Essanon, there was having no crosstalk. I need someone to talk to. Like, you're just like, you just say it, but then there's no support. And then I leave and I'm like, well, I feel worse than when I walked in.
And my mom is like barely untangling. Like, we're talking 40 years of just chaos. And I'm watching her start to like pull it apart, but it is like slow. And there is a piece where the person that did this isn't available to be talked to or any of that. So like, you just need to know how huge and wonderful everything you're doing for your family, for yourself, everything. Like, I know you know it probably, but like, you don't see the ownership is everything for your people.
I'm sorry to hear that. And no, thank you for sharing
it's
that.
Real life. I'm like listening to you and I'm like, God, what a different life it would have been, you know? No, if someone like you was like my dad, which is awkward because you're younger than me, but you know what I mean.
Again, as I think it's so important that we talk about this, you know, and I think that's,
it's a lot of hurt. Really,
it is. And this isn't going anywhere, right? I mean, mm-hmm. mental health and addiction has just been on a steady incline over the last 20 years. And I mean, what is it going to take for a change and a shift to happen? And I think it starts with communication. It starts about having the conversation and being open like this, because there's millions, not thousands, not hundreds, it's millions of people that are in your shoes, in my shoes, and that are going through this today. And so
And there's a million Ashleys, like
millions more. There's more because wherever there's
going, like I'm now addict. Supposed to love you, like you were an asshole a day ago. Yeah. You know, it's hard.
But I think you like just to bring that because like Al-Anon is a tremendous resource. But again, it's
a piece.
It's a piece. But there's what Ashley and what we're trying to bring together for that is really another tool in the toolkit, right? Is if Al-Anon works for you, phenomenal. We love it. That's what helped Ashley tremendously, but she was looking at how can I even add to that? And so, again, from crosstalk and being able to have that insight, but even having clinical oversight and actually having takeaways that are tangible from a professional. So
Catherine, what were you going to say, Ben?
Well, I was going to say to you, I mean, obviously we have a similar story as well. But I think for us with our parents, the generation, they didn't talk about it. They didn't communicate, you know? So I know that we also, my mother's still alive and we have that issue, but the communication mm-hmm. is not like this.
Well, and my grandfather was an alcoholic, so it was genetic and it was what she learned to live with. And you either marry one, become one is the statistic that leads that. So her emotional bandwidth for it was, it's so comfortable to her, which is crazy, but it's true because it's unhealthy, but she saw it.
Have you gotten in the mends from your mom?
She would say yes. She would say yes for sure. You know, but no, not really. Mm-mm. Not really.
What would you want or need?
See, that's the part that's hard for me because I don't long for that like you do. Mm-hmm. My brothers do, I think. I think that they've handled it very differently. I was kind of the one where I'm like, I just don't even want to like, I'll take it. I'll take your, you know, whatever apology and just like, move over here. I just kind of compartmentalized it, put it over here. But I also don't know that she has the capacity to apologize in the right way.
Yeah.
She doesn't have the tools that, you know, she truly didn't and doesn't, you know, and I think that it's a different generation.
Very
different. Not that that's an excuse, but I do. I think people are doing the things that you're doing and paying attention and are getting honest and, you know, and I don't think she's at that place. I don't think she's fully ever gotten honest with herself. So,
Yeah, we don't have a lot of ownership going on. No. So,
no, not really either. But again, it's not an excuse, but it just feels so generational. I think we're just more open to it now. We're talking about it more now. People are more aware of it. But not to switch gears, but I do have a question kind of in regards to that. Like, since it is genetic, have y'all had conversations about your own children and like what that can possibly look like in the future? Because that's tough.
Yes. And so we are very aware of that when we had conversations probably even a couple years ago around this and how we're going to navigate this and incorporate the communication with our kids because, you know, they got a 50-50 chance of having it. Like, I mean, pretty severely just based on my genetic makeup and the background and the history. And so We're already starting the conversation with Delilah around mental health. And again, is what I like for every morning, like we start at, she's 5 years old. And so we wake up and we do a gratitude list. We do three things that she's grateful for and why. And I do that with her. And
I was thinking about that when you said that, I was like, I'm going to do that with my kids. I love that.
And so, I mean, but we made it a cool process where she lights candles and it's kind of this experience where she looks forward to doing it. And when we don't do it, she's like, Dad, we didn't do our gratitude list. And so it's just starting to incorporate these little behaviors. And then just even when she's really upset, getting on her level, getting, you know, literally physically getting on my knees and just talking to her at her level and just kind of understanding and kind of walking through these processes because, you know, we had the shooting that just happened and it was too close figuratively and literally. I mean, it was 12 minutes from our house and it was this same age as our kids and to have to sit down and have that conversation with Delilah, you know, that, you know, not only is there, you know, trainings and, or, you know, you're gonna have, you know, for tornadoes and for earthquakes and things like that. But now there's, you know, we had to use the term like bad people that can come on to campus and that, you know, that can, you know, for an active shooter type of thing. And it's like how do you break that down? And again, Ashley was instrumental in that process and how we did that. But it's having that conversation. And I think what we're really trying to do is create a really safe place for them to come to talk and communicate. And You know, because there's pretty fascinating statistics that are out there. I mean, if you don't drink or use drugs or any mood altering substances by the age of 21, you have a 90% chance of never struggling with addiction. Wow. And so,
My husband is that preacher's kid, never drank really, never did anything, still has never done a drug in his life. He's 48.
Yeah.
Insane.
But I think just kind of looking at some of those things and just really trying to make and show and leveraging the knowledge that we have today, right? Because I also think that where there's a default from like the baby boomers and some of the older demographic is they really didn't even know how to process or share what was really going on. They just weren't equipped with it. And so I think we're in a different time now, but it's being present. And I think the best thing we can do is being there for our kids and to know that they can trust us, they have a safe place to come to, and that they have support.
Like literally I can die happy knowing like that's what I've done with my kids. That has been my goal since I could understand what the goal was.
Yeah.
It just matters. I'm not going to nail it. I'm not trying to be perfect, but just the breaking of the cycle. And 100%. It's not lost on me that my daughter and I were due a day apart and ended up being 2 days apart. Like it, God is just really the hand and the poetic ability of all of that is just never lost on me.
So good.
The statistics that you were sharing with me too fascinated me with the binge drinking that's going on in our age right now, isn't it? Can you lay some of those stats out?
Well, actually coming here, that's why we did the PSA.
Yeah.
We actually did a public service announcement around this, but moving to Tennessee, the number one health crisis in the state of Tennessee is binge drinking. And so when
we're off of Broadway
in our age, no, like our age, like the, right. Well, isn't well, it like well, 30s, well, actually, 40s, 50s?
I'm not sure about that piece, but I think the thing that you're talking about is the leading cause of death in America for 50 year old individuals and younger is substance abuse. Mm. So, I mean, it's literally the leading cause of death. And so when you look at this, that's what I'm saying. It's not going anywhere. And I mean, prior to, I'll give you, you know what the, craziest thing is prior to COVID, somebody was overdosing at the rate of every 11 minutes. You know what it is today?
One.
Every 90 seconds.
Mm.
And so it's.
Do you think that's because of fentanyl too?
Yeah. I mean, that adds to it, but it's again, is like, I even ask the question and start the conversation is, you know, we talk about how much fentanyl and how much opiates and how much, you know, how many drugs are coming into the States. My question is why is there such a high demand?
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, it's one. Yeah, we understand that. But why are so many people wanting to, like, why are they so disconnected?
Like, it's
so
a business.
Well, no, but like, why are so many people wanting to escape?
Yeah.
Like,
right.
I mean, like,
you don't have a business if you don't have clients.
That's my point. Exactly. Right. But being in a very sober state, I mean, not my younger self, but now it's like, I would never want to partake in any of that stuff. I'd be, you know, like, if I ever had the thought of a beer sounds good or something, like, of course that thought comes and goes, and it's how I process. And that's, and again, it's fleeting. It comes and goes, but like just looking at what is out there today and like, you know, with opiates and it's just like, I can't imagine like if the landscape has changed is what I'm getting at. I mean, when we were younger, it wasn't like we're going to take something and we were going to die.
Right. Well, here's the thing. So I've never touched a drug because I've always been afraid that I'm going to die. Right. But back then you wouldn't, like, it's unless you like overdosed. Right. But like now I'm like to my kids, if you even try the small, you will die. Like most likely because of freaking fentanyl.
Yeah.
Like that's where
something's laced with something.
Yeah. That's where I'm like that piece. I'm like, just don't do it.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, it's just really, the world we live in is different today. And it's just, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's just, you look at like, why are there such a high demand for these types of things that are out there? It's really alarming.
One of the things that, you know, like you're saying right now, with everyone, you know, wanting the drugs and stuff, I just wish there was an easier reach for people to be able to have therapy. Because I think that's an issue too. A lot of people are like, well, I can't afford it. And it's like, oh, like what therapy's done for all of us in this room has been amazing. It's helped with so much. That's the piece where I'm like, why? I just wish there was something we can do. And I know you do that, right, with what you're working on right now.
Yeah. And well, I mean, that's, I think the more that we can get behind that, we can get more people supporting that effort is important. Like that's the stuff that I'm doing and working with Dr. Amen at the Change Your Brain Foundation is we're trying to have it be more accessible for people to actually get scans of their brains. And I think the thing that I love around this, and it's even changing the, the narrative of how we look at mental health, right? And we've been treating mental health the same way we have for the last 150 years. We've been clustering a bunch of symptoms and throwing medication at it, when in reality, we know the organ that's directly impacted. So why are we not focusing on it? And that's being the brain. And through, you know, SPECT imaging, where you can actually see the deficiencies through where people have less blood flow through their brain, you can actually see what may be causing or triggering different things. And so I think the more that we provide access and we can actually get to the core root cause of this, it's going to help us be able to treat further and further and have better treatment plans for these types of things. But I think, you know, from the stuff that we're doing at Dr. Amen, allowing people to actually get brain scans of what's going on within their brain to see what's going on, and then being able to set them up with appropriate therapists and psychiatrists to be able to come up with an effective treatment plan. I mean, we need to make that more readily available for people. It's time.
It's literally the only way that I've been able to do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Three things you're grateful for to end this on a happier note.
Oh my gosh. I'm grateful for my sobriety. Mm-hmm. I'm grateful for my relationship with God, and I'm grateful, that I'm able to be present, today.
Yeah. Well, Jason, we are so happy that you came on the show. Thank you, for again, doing what you do. And I'm proud to be your friend, and I'm happy to, you know, to watch you do everything you're doing and join forces with you. So thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you.
Hey there, mamas. Everyone knows how it goes. You're giving it your all to breastfeed or pump for your little one. But there are times when you might need a little extra help. That's where traditional medicinals Mother's Milk comes in. Mother's Milk is an organic herbal tea blend designed to support healthy lactation for breastfeeding and pumping moms. Plus, it's caffeine-free. Learn more about Mother's Milk at traditionalmedicinals.com/Mother's Milk. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. You know, I don't even know where to start with this, because it's the comfort, it's the style, it's the whole look. That's what I love about my Tecovas. This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop before attending your next concert. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend, and Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. Shop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, and shop new styles. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's Tecovas, TECOVAS.com, and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
It's lunchtime at Tim Hortons, and we're serving up a special deal just for you. Our new $5.99 lunch deal includes your choice of any lunch sandwich and a side of crunchy kettle chips. Because what's lunch without a little crunch? And the sandwich choice is all yours, like a ham and Swiss, Chipotle chicken wrap, BLT, and more, made to order just the way you like it. Tim Hortons' new lunch deal. Simple, delicious, and just $5.99. Now that's a good deal. Only at your neighborhood Tim's. U.S. only. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.